In today's episode, we talk with a father, husband, founder, CEO, lawyer, and change maker from our neighbor to the north. Najeed Kassam is the CEO and founder of a software platform called Kela. And Kela works to help nonprofits in all of their different activities, from fundraising to volunteer management to CRM, whatever you need. The reason we talked today is because Kela and Najeed have led the charge in bringing artificial intelligence to the nonprofit space. And I really enjoyed in our conversation how we explored how important analytics, even as advanced analytics as AI, is to the little guy. And in fact, the small organizations that don't have extra resources to burn really are the ones who need to pay the most attention to their analytics because they need to get the most out of what they have. Don't have to have these incredibly advanced tech skills inside your organization. That's the point of bringing in outside resources like Kela or other software that can give you those tools for you. We discuss how data can be your unfair advantage, right? It can help you succeed where maybe others don't. And we'll talk about how you are richer than you think. So let's get started. Hello, and welcome to Heart, Soul, and Data, the podcast where we explore the human side of analytics to amplify the impact of nonprofits everywhere. With me, your host, Alexandra Mannerings. All right, well, thank you so much for joining me today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
I am very honored to be joined today by Najeed Kassam. And this is one impressive bio I'm about to share. So
it's always so embarrassing.
It is. Hang on. And I love the last part. 3 decades working in and around the nonprofit sector, right? CEO and founder of Kela, which we're going to love hearing about later. And you have founded multiple nonprofits, Better Canada Initiative, Believe Vancouver. And to crown it all, right, you've got what, the Queen Elizabeth II Diamond Jubilee Medal for contribution and service to Canada. Come on, that's pretty cool.
So that is cool. I didn't get to meet the Queen, if that's your next question, but As the Queen is still Canada's head of state, to serve this country, to serve any country, to serve humanity is such an honor and a responsibility. And so I definitely did not expect that. And this, I was young. I was still in law school. This must be 10 years ago, maybe. Maybe it's an honor to serve. And when it's recognized, it's more to amplify the voices around me than my own.
No, and that really, I think, hits on why I'm excited to talk with you today, because you have this really interesting background and you've come to nonprofit from law. So studied law, practiced as a lawyer, and now you've spent this very impressive career in nonprofits. So I'm curious, how did you come to be in the nonprofit space? How have you put that law background to work?
And I would say that it actually started my sector. I'm a pretty young guy. I've been in the sector since I was a kid. So my passion and dedication to the sector came long before I was a business person or a lawyer or a public policy dork. Like it came, and I think my mom and dad left East Africa at a time of turmoil. My father-in-law was from Uganda. My mom and dad are from Tanzania. My mother-in-law is from Kenya. And they all left in various waves, from refugee to fear of persecution to, somewhere on that spectrum. And my mom and dad grew up in England. They got there when they were like 9 or 10. My mom still has her British accent despite 37 years in Canada. And they were so lucky to be supported by community, by civil society, by scholarships, by our sector. Then they moved to Canada. When we were born, all my brothers and I were born here in Vancouver. And, one of the things my parents instilled in us was service and giving back to a community, or whether it's the country or specific communities or the world, that allowed us to have the privilege and opportunity that we have. I never had to worry about my security. I never had to worry about food. I had to work hard. I had to get scholarships and do the normal things, but I had the, I think the Canadian dream is better than the American dream. So I'm going to go with the Canadian dream. And I really have lived it. And so because of that, that service, that passion, I started in the sector when I was four. So 32 years, I'm 35 now. And so I was a volunteer, which is basically extortion asking someone to give money to like a 3-year-old going door to door, but you know, it worked. It was for poverty alleviation. I remember those door to doors. And my love affair with the sector has sort of spanned more than 3 decades now. I've had the privilege of holding executive director, board, charity lawyer, but also like volunteer, you know, big brother, big sister, mentorship kind of work. I've been so privileged. And so what a lot of folks don't know is, you know, 5.6% of the US GDP is the nonprofit sector, over 10% of the private sector workforce in the United States. Now I'm going to sound like the PhD dropout that I am, but as the welfare state has eroded over the last 20 years, the civil society has kind of come in to fill that gap. And so, you know, I believe that our sector is heartbreakingly necessary, but nonetheless necessary. And so, you know, regardless of your political ilk, we all have a responsibility to strengthen that sector, to take care of the folks in our community who are a little less fortunate than you and I, for example. It is an honor, and that's kind of how I've gotten here.
No, and I mean, I agree with everything that you say, and it would be nice if we put ourselves out of a job.
Absolutely. And I will say this, because my thesis was going to be on this. I subscribe to the belief that civil society is a precondition or a maintainer of democracy. And so by doing this work, by creating spaces where people can, you know, civilize disagreement, debate to elevate policy conversations, to support those in need. So the work that we do in this sector is fundamentally making our countries and our democracy stronger. And so sounds like a pretty good way to spend a life, you know?
Absolutely. And now you have helped co-found and are the CEO of Kela, which is an all-in-one style software, right? Covers donations, volunteers, marketing, and of course my favorite and why I'm hoping, you know, get to talk to you today, analytics.
Absolutely.
And
yes,
so
ma'am.
I want to hear a little bit more about, you know, your thoughts of bringing analytics right into nonprofits. I know from my end, most commonly I hear from nonprofits, I don't even know where to start.
That's actually a perfect launch point. I'll tell you how it started. One of my staff a couple of years ago brought to me a sales analytics software that they wanted to buy. And this is when we were really small, we maybe 15 or 20 people, and we're big now, and there's, you know, too many staff and so many Kelaers running around the world. But we were small, and I'm still so cheap. I was like, why do we need not, you know, spend this money? Is it necessary? And of course it was my sales team asking, and they sold me super hard on the ability to transform how they worked, to, you know, to look for things like anomalies and to look at propensity and look how they could use predictive modeling. Well, they couldn't, the software use predictive modeling to make their time more efficient, their asks more effective, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And I went, ultimately I agreed, because I'm a good litigator, but they're better salespeople. How about that? And they made a good case. Ultimately, the merits, the ROI was super clear. And I remember getting in the, I have a clipboard, a scuba diving clipboard in my shower, because it seems like that's where all the ideas come from. And my wife was tired of, honey, write this down, you know, like, which happened way too frequently in the shower. So I remember getting in the shower and thinking to myself, we should be doing this in the sector. You know, we operate with more scarcity and more need. We operate with people being bombarded with asks for donations, people mis-stewardshipping, for lack of a better word. Stewardship is done in a spray and pray kind of way, as is asks. And I was like, wait, data can answer these questions. Not just data, but data can guide the folks. It can provide a supercharger or an unfair advantage. And so I kind of wrote it down on the clipboard, and that was the beginning of a journey that has led us to, you know, becoming a world leader in predictive analytics for fundraising and for the sector.
Many nonprofits also think, well, I'm too small to need data analytics, or I'm even too small to afford anything around data analytics. So how would you help the 90% of nonprofits out there that are under $1 million operating?
Yeah.
How should they be thinking about
that's
bringing
where
in analytics?
That's where we eat, right? Like the idea is like there, I think either I or someone on my team is giving a lecture at a conference in the next 6 months called You're Richer Than You Think. Now, I think every nonprofit's data set, you have 10,000 supporters and 4,000 historical donors, and You have people clicking on e-blasts and newsletters and responding to things. There are stories to be told from that. Stories that no human eye can possibly see. To me, the little guy, so to speak, can take the biggest leaps because they don't have the resources. So I actually, kind of flip that narrative on its head and saying, especially the little folks need to be empowered by data simply because they can't afford not to be. Whether if I have, my wife and I try to give X percentage of our income every year to charity, I don't discriminate whether you're small or big. I look at the work you're doing, the impact that we can help create, and choose. Every small nonprofit is competing with big nonprofits and other small nonprofits. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean that in a reality kind of way. If I'm engaged, if the storytelling you're doing is compelling, if I've made a donation in the past, I'm a prime candidate, but you've got to know that. Data can help you tell that story. Now, I want to be clear because a lot of fundraisers are like, but we've been doing things for 800 years. Yeah, that's right. And horses were really effective for a really long time. And then some dude in Detroit was like, let's add many horses to an engine. And this is not about putting fundraisers out of their jobs. I'm a pretty decent tennis player, but I suck with a wood racket. You give me a proper piece of technology, which is what a racket is, and I can play pretty well. This is giving that horsepower, no pun intended, to the small guys. And look, you don't have to be tech focused. You don't have to have a degree in computer science or data analytics. Predictive analytics, data modeling, data visualization should be available to everybody because that's how we're going to get closer to leveling the playing field, because great small organizations are doing great work. I think the folks that are doing that need more of a mindset shift than anything else. It doesn't have to be expensive. It doesn't have to be complicated. It's about being open-minded and adapting. And
absolutely. Now, your team sold you really well. So what advice could you give an organization who says, okay, I hear you. Maybe mm-hmm. I've been ignoring the fact that I could bring more analytics in here. How do I go about evaluating a platform? How do I go yep. about deciding what to bring in? How do I know if it's going to be worth investing? Change is just as much as the investment as the money Absolutely. You're going to spend. So, right. Absolutely. So having to change my CRM, having to change how my donations are collected, having to change all of this, how yep. would you help them start that process and think about even measuring the ROI?
So there's two things, it's a two-part question, and I'm going to go to the first one. Firstly, changing CRM is not easy. And I want to acknowledge that for folks that want to make that change, I think it's really important. And so many CRMs users have been stuck in the 1990s or the early 2000s. And I get it. They're so scared of changing. If you ask me to change my CRM, I'll say, I'll laugh. I'll actually start laughing. The courage of doing things better all the time can be worth the change. Secondly, we launched this new product called fundraisingkit.com. It's just like, call it kit. You don't need to change your CRM. We're integrated with Salesforce and Razor's Edge and Neon and all these other incredible tools where we say changing your CRM is scary. You don't have to do it to adopt that kind of change. And so we understand that. That's the first part of your question. The second part of your question is, how do you evaluate? This is going to sound like a strange thing when we're talking about data analytics, but the number one thing should be usability, right? So trusting the companies, and there's not that many platforms to evaluate, to be really honest with you. This is sort of a do I or don't I more than anything else. But there's a couple of folks. Is it usable? Is it complicated? Do I have to do a query to visualize my data? Is it coming to me? And so we like to make a joke at work. The best software is the software you use, whether it was built in 1973 or built in 2021. You gotta use it. It's sort of a weird response, but look at it. Does it feel right? Does it play right? Does it have a good help and support community? Is the knowledge base good? Is it visually pleasing? I know those are strange things to say, but that's gonna be, much more determinative. How about that?
I agree with you completely. And actually, I laugh about a lot of the work that I've done in past careers and in mine now, that you can have the best analysis that you've done and you could have had the best data scientists on it. And if you don't present it in a way that makes sense to the person who needs to take action on it or the person who needs to use it in his or her decision, you may as well have not done it in the first place. right? It has to be usable. It has to be accessible. You have to be able to actually get into the information that's part of it. So I agree with you completely on that. And I don't think it's an unusual thing at all.
You know, and I think it's funny because so many software companies don't give UX the whatever that it deserves. Like, you know, a user's experience is so important.
Yeah.
And I think that,
I think it's funny because it's kind of like engineering as well. I think a lot of times engineers are like, well, I'll just write a manual and it will tell the person who needs this thing how to use it. And they'll just follow the manual rather than being like, how do you develop a system that's human proof, right? How do you develop something that like you can actually make work?
And I think that's the other thing, like technology is a tool, right? Ultimately, like it's not, you know, one of the things I hate is when folks in data science and in analytics say like, oh, we can automate. Maybe you can automate parts of it, but ultimately decision-making, we use AI every single day in our technology, but it's as an aid for the fundraiser. It's not like we're saying you aren't an expert in what we're doing. It's not like saying we don't want you to make decisions. We simply want to say you need a tool to help you do those things. I think it gets dangerous when that line is crossed because one, it's hard to trust. And two, machines get it wrong. Artificial intelligence is about patterns and predictions and all these things, which can help you automate things. It can help you order, reorder, and prioritize things. But ultimately, that agency needs to live with, in this case, the fundraiser. And I think having a tool that you're comfortable with, that looks the way you want it, feels the way you want it to, is inevitably going to solve so many of those problems.
No, and you bring up a great topic that I actually want to dive into a little bit more about artificial intelligence. I think most people in most sectors are either not really sure what artificial intelligence is outside of like sci-fi and HAL, right? We're still at like HAL and Terminator in our understanding of artificial intelligence. So can you speak a little bit to how AI could help a nonprofit and how they should think about using it to enhance maybe the data and analytics that they're already doing?
So I'm going to use something that doesn't seem like AI because everyone in the world has Netflix. When Netflix tells you what shows to watch next, that's using machine learning, right? It's looking at you as a user and it's saying you watch these shows and you look like these people like these shows. And therefore I'm going to suggest that Alexandra watch The Bourne Supremacy. I have no idea what you watch, but you know, I think it's, or whatever, or you know, like for me, if it's a sports movie, I'm probably going to watch it, right? Like that's AI. Like I, you know, and so, you know, the way that we like to think about it at Kila and at Kit is AI sees things, it creates patterns, it has recognition, it crunches millions or billions of points of data to help serve a decision up that ultimately you can make, right? It isn't Terminator. It's just saying, and with enough time and enough data scientists, you could probably come up to pretty similar predictions, right? Like to be honest, that's not practical. And I think that's where we have to think about predictive. I'm talking about predictive analytics, for example, and machine learning backed analytics. It's saying we've done something in 3 seconds that would take you 30 hours to do. You have 1,000 contacts and doing the calculations is going to take you 10 or 20 or 30 hours for each one. It's impossible. It's not realistic. The AI, the machine learning, the algos can do that and then give you its determination to allow you to use your human brain to say, that makes sense to me. And I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. Or in the case of what we do, this is our determination. This is what we think you should do, but ultimately that's up to you as a fundraiser. And so, or me as a Netflix user for that matter. It's not starting the shows, it's recommending that I watch the shows. Now there's lots of kinds of AI and you know this, I'm speaking specifically about predictive analytics with machine learning based on large data sets, which is what we do. But I think it's not scary. It's not, if it's done right, and I'm confident in our team, if it's done, you know, in the right way, built, monitored in the right way, again, it goes back to being a tool, not a decision maker. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And I think it is also helpful to understand the different places that when we say data, analytics, AI, like what we're talking about bringing to bear, because data can be something as simple as describing your current situation, right? Here's how many donors I have. Here's how many donors came from this place. Here's how many volunteers I have and how many they came from
that
place.
Or here's how much money Alexandra gave last year.
Yep.
Or Alexandra and her husband gave this and that. Like, that's data. It doesn't feel right. like data. Or like,
but it is.
Alexandra lives in this zip code. Yes. This zip code has an average median income of X. Like,
right.
these are little things that are so easily accessible. Hey, a lot of Alexandra clicked on this newsletter 3 times in 1 week. That's data, whether we like it or not. That's data that, you know, let's be honest, MailChimp is already tracking. You can see that if you go into her MailChimp, whatever, and see, but that's not practical. By bringing those things into a coherent, you know, kind of well thought out piece of technology, it can serve that, like I said, on a platter for you. Mm-hmm. And that way you don't have to go to the census site, type in the zip code, cross-reference, like it does all that for you. And so again, it's not scary stuff. It's like, it's really, in some ways it's really basic, but it's basic plus basic all together. And the sum really is greater than all its parts.
One thing I wanted to ask about bringing AI, we talked a little bit about how the small guys should probably pay even more attention to the data mm-hmm. because they don't have the wiggle room to be making mistakes or making mm-hmm. less effective decisions with the resources mm-hmm. that they have. In terms of AI, you know, you mentioned that one of the strengths of AI is it can take data at scale and mm-hmm. really make it actionable. If you don't have billions of rows of data, are you still going to find the same kind of value?
I mean, there is a minimum amount you have. If you have 14 donors, like, God bless you, but go knock on doors because it's more effective. But I think the number is like, when you've got a couple thousand contacts and a couple years of records, import them from Excel files that you've got. You've got them. The IRS requires that you've got them somewhere. You've got them, right? And so you don't need to be the San Diego Hospital Foundation. Mm-hmm. To make use of data. Right. You know, we pull in that census data. We partner with wealth screening tools that can augment data. We use third-party data sets, and we have existing, you know, we have patterns that we see across the sector, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So as long as you've got that very reasonable minimum amount, a couple thousand contacts, you know, a couple years of donation history, you're in good shape. If you have more, it makes them better. But the more you use them, the more you track, the more integrations you connect, the more, you know, the web of you create, which is there. It's just hard to create it sometimes, the more effective. We had a customer who sent an email marketing using our SmartAss technology. And in the previous year, that camp pre-Kila, they got like $15,000 and they got $80,000 from that campaign. Just because they were smart. But it's not even smart. They weren't smart. They're just a little bit smart, a little bit more targeted, a little bit more, you know, X, Y, and Z. It's little things that can often drive huge differences. And I think that's where we don't need to be scared of the data.
Well, and you hit on something that I think is so critical in both assessing anything that you bring in and making the determination that you should change how you do analytics or change the platform or take a different approach, which is, anything you bring in has to be better than your existing system, right? We aren't dumb. We aren't flipping a coin when we think about who to talk to or what program to implement. We're using our own experience and our knowledge and our wisdom to make Absolutely. Those decisions. And so it's just, can you, like you said, upgrade your tennis racket? Can you bring in that little bit more
really
of information?
Cool. We create a base case, which is how a general fundraiser would do it in the sector. Now, everyone has her special tricks, and I'm not going to be able to, know everyone, but there's a pretty, we know a lot about the sector. There's a base case. This is this, and there's almost like a back of the napkin formula you can do for a lot of things, right? We use that as our basic. If our predictions don't beat that, mm-hmm. we aren't gonna show it to you. Mm-hmm. You know, we want to make sure that there's that control group, so to speak. It's not really a control group because it's just we mm-hmm. trifurcate and bifurcate old data sets to test our own math, so to speak, yep. right? And so, and again, it goes back to, you're not doing this automatically. You can disagree with a prediction. That's okay. I don't always like what Amazon suggests I buy. In fact, most of the time I don't, but it gives me pause for thought. And that's all this is for. Oh, wait, Alexandra might be interested in that campaign. I never thought of her for that peer-to-peer campaign. that can lead to tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars, because you could have a network and then that one, oh, I never thought of that. It's 100 of those in a month, and suddenly there's huge ROI.
And to your point, it's about finding those couple little additional patterns that maybe you didn't have, and you can add those up and really take that step forward. And
we're talking a lot about predictions too, right? Like there's also visualizing data.
Yes.
And like a lot of technology, with all due respect, sucks at it. It feels like Clippy and 1997 Microsoft Word graphics. Visualizing, being able to play with your data as somebody who doesn't need to do queries, who anybody can do it, you know, that is a powerful side of data and analytics that we often don't talk about.
Mm-hmm. And so really like what we've come through this conversation is about how especially those small and middle-sized nonprofits can bring both the descriptive and visualization and predictive analytics in terms of advanced tools and even artificial intelligence, machine learning, can bring that into their organization without hiring teams of data scientists. It's let the computers do what the computers are good at, and it feeds it to us so we can do what we're good at as humans.
You know, we had this joke when we started this that it was like, imagine a fundraising consultant and a data scientist had a baby. That's what this technology is. It's like, you know, and it's like, imagine, and that's the kind of hope and dream we have for this technology. And ultimately, you know, we have three pillars in our intelligence work. One, predictive analytics, you know, helping you optimize your ask. That's what it is, right? In layperson's terms, it's like, how do I ask more effectively, whether it's when or who or how much or whatever it might be. That's pillar one. Pillar two is visualize. How do I see my data? How do I bring these, you know, big parts of data and visualize it in a way that's actionable, so I can actually do stuff with it and understand it more effectively. And third, I think is the most interesting, it's how do I prioritize my work accordingly? I either saw stuff or was told things that'll allow me to make my day a little bit less stressful. And ultimately, that's what this is all about. Beth Cantor, who I serve on the N10 board of directors with, wrote a book on the overworked, underpaid nonprofit staffer. I think it's got a much more eloquent title, but it's that. And our goal and data's ultimate, you know, beauty is that it can help relieve some of that stress, that burnout, because it helps you in your work. And ultimately, it helps you. That's the key to all this technology, right? And I think that's exciting.
Thank you so much. This has been such an invigorating conversation. I love it. And I have a feeling that we'll be talking about this again, maybe in a follow-up. Well, thank you so much again for your time. That was Najeed Kassam from Kela. You can come hear more from Najeed at our free virtual summit all about measuring what matters. It's happening September 29th. We hope to see you there. Again, it's free, it's virtual, and it is going to be packed with insights at velocity, 15-minute talks from experts like Najeed, many others, who are going to share all of these fundamental skills and ideas for getting started with measuring what matters. There's a link in the show notes, or you can check it out at maracanos.com/events. Whether you are looking to use analytics to describe a particular situation, understand the details better, whether you're looking to visualize it, be able to really dive into the patterns that maybe you couldn't pick up when you were looking at individual pieces of data like one donor, or if you're looking to actually really predict what could happen or who you should go after for fundraising, analytics can bring an edge to your organization that's going to allow you to truly amplify your impact. And I hope that you are convinced by Najeed's argument that this isn't just for the big organizations. This is for the little guys too. And in fact, as stewards of our resources, we have an obligation to try to do the most that we can with them. And it doesn't mean that you have to bring in a whole team of data scientists. You can find platforms out there that you can integrate with your existing ones, or even just find out how you can take your Excel spreadsheets to that next level. However it is, I hope that you do look to take that next step and bring analytics into your organization. If you're interested in learning more about Kela, you can find them on the web at keela.com. And I'll catch you next time. You've been listening to Heart, Soul, and Data. This podcast is brought to you by Miraconous, an analytics, education, consulting, and data services company dedicated to helping nonprofits amplify their impact through data. Learn more at Miraconous.com, MERAKINOS.com.